Hi there. Welcome to Fantasy Focus Baseball. It's a beautiful Thursday morning, March 24th, 2022. Your 2022 baseball season starts 2 weeks from today. He is Tristan Happy Cockcroft. Kyle Soppy produces and researches, and I'm merely Eric Carabell. Lots going on in the fantasy baseball world that we're going to discuss today with Tristan and Kyle. Tristan, how are you? It's a little bit rainy here and rainy in Florida, I believe. Some of the starting pitchers are getting scratched from their outings. We'll get to what we've noticed so far in spring training games this week. I watched a couple already. How are you, sir?
I am doing well, but I hate hearing rain. We cannot afford that in a short, abbreviated spring training to have pitchers thrown off their schedules any more than they have been. I'll tell you, are any pitchers still healthy right now? Like, everybody sounds like they're going to be about 2-3 weeks behind. You and I will be pitching opening day for our Yankees and Phillies.
I could probably fit into the bullpen. All right, on today's show, we're going to talk about Tristan's awesome article, The Kings of Command. We'll preview corner infielders, hash browns. We're going to start with the news. And let me just ask, so Tommy Pham signed with the Reds. That's a bit of news. That's interesting to me. And you wrote about it today briefly.
The Reds paid some money. Can you believe it?
I don't know. And why? Unless they're just going to try to move him in July, right? I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me. So you've got Jake Fraley playing left field, and he's not going to be an all-star. But, like, why would you sign Tommy Pham? That just seems odd to me. Doesn't it seem odd to you?
Unless, I guess, they didn't appreciate being told they were trying to – or, you know, like, baseball fans saying they were trying to lose. I don't know. I agree with you. It doesn't make an awful lot of sense. I suppose they feel that in that ballpark where it could inflate his power potential a little bit. By the way, he has really good hard contact metrics. I didn't realize they were as good as they were until I took another look today. Maybe they're just figuring they can get him. You know, he gets a 20 homer first half and they cash him in for prospects.
Look, he's a big walker. I mean, that's a lot of walks. Yep. It's a low batting average. He's much better in points leagues than Roto. But then again, in Roto, you know, that's a 15 homer, 14 steal season. He has 225 stolen base seasons to his record. He'll bat in the top third of Cincinnati's lineup. He's not a bad player at all. I can't think this is good things for Nick Senzel. Nick Senzel is one of those top prospects who's just never going to amount to much in fantasy. Right?
Now, yeah, but the one advantage here is that Pham is notoriously streaky. And I do suspect some of that has to come down to the eye issues he deals with at times, that is going to have some sort of impact on his hitting. He tore it up. I remember he was let go in my big points league. I picked him up like the week he started hitting, and my brother was the one who cut him, so he was pretty mad about that. So I remember he had this 40 games, actually I think it was 50 games of just amazing numbers the rest of the year. He was effectively useless for fantasy purposes. And if you look at the rest of his career, that kind of went that way. So I think there'll be opportunities for guys like Senzel and Fraley. The difference is now is they have to work their way into that lineup. They have to earn it more than they would have where it would have just been handed to them.
So just recently, I had moved Pham and Michael Conforto down in my rankings, not in a good way, to like outside the top 250, thinking, well, the season starts in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. If they aren't signed by now, Pham signs, I'll move him to like, I would say, I don't know, like 120, 130, something like that. Because he's a guy in Roto who can hit for power and steal bases. Hopefully he won't hit below like 230 again, as he has for each of the past two seasons. But to me, maybe around 15, something like that feels about right to me.
I think it's a little generous, I think. But I see your point. If you believe in the steals and that it rebounds to a certain degree, I can definitely see that.
Well, rebounds, he's still 14 and 20 chances. He tried to run last year. So like, that's not a rebound. The only rebound here would be on BABIP.
He didn't. I mean,
he takes walks.
He didn't run down the stretch at all. And his numbers cratered. So I am a little worried about that. To your point that, you know, do you believe in the 5-year history or do you believe in what was 2.5 months to end the season where he pretty much didn't try? I don't know. We'll see. I worry a little for Roto. That's all.
My point to you would be, at what point do we stop drafting Conforto?
Yeah, we're probably there now because the in addition to just not knowing where he's going to be, now the question comes into play of, does he land with a team and he's behind a la the Lance Lynn's and Jake Arrieta's of that year where they signed mid to late during spring training. And then the other one, too, is he's got a little bit of an injury history. So we don't know exactly where he's at and how he's going to get up to full speed with his team once he does find a destination.
We did get some update on a couple of rules earlier this week. And one of them affects Shohei Ohtani, probably the only one it affects. Mm-hmm. Now, you already have him number one in points leagues, and I have him like number 10 in Roto. But the fact that he can now stay in the game as the designated hitter when he's a starting pitcher is kind of a big deal to the Angels. But is it a big deal in the fantasy world?
It is in that you still can't yet get stats on both sides of the ball. I agree with that strategy where you need to have to make a decision day to day. So for those of you who are in the weekly leagues, which means traditionally offside, or if you select that in the custom league settings, now if he's starting twice somehow, if he gets a two-start week, you know he's going to be in there as a DH as well. You're going to get those two games of hitting numbers, so you feel very good about the offensive potential. I think this does kind of strengthen him a little bit in those offside and the more unusual leagues.
Any of the other rules that you feel affect fantasy at all? There will be the man-for-man runner at second base in extra innings.
I love it.
That player will be blinded
by
the light.
Thank you for not using zombie runner. Thank you for not.
Yeah, it's not a ghost. It's an actual person out there.
If it was a zombie runner, he'd be like going over the shortstop and eating him. And that would just be too dark for baseball.
Even for baseball. But that doesn't really affect anything in fantasy, I don't think. Neither does going doubleheaders going back to nine innings. But does it?
It does. Well, okay.
Does it affect your approach to drafting or constructing a team?
No, not really. I mean, the only thing I think it's going to do is it does keep us in that mold of you can give up the unearned run with a good pitching performance and therefore fall into a loss or a blown save, for example. And for those of you in points leagues, on a daily basis, that's a little bit frustrating, but it's a minimal thing.
Right. But like Raisel Iglesias is going to be in the game for the Angels and tie games and extra innings. Like not a lot of closers will be on the road.
And they might be,
but Iglesias will.
They might be in the ninth before that anyway.
Right. So like he may win a little bit more. You may also lose a little bit more, but there'll be unearned runs. So I don't think it affects my play.
It enhances the relief wins and losses. It's going to accelerate those stats a little bit more. That's all. But not all
right. I wrote down about 10 things that I've noticed from spring training, either watching the games or from stats. You tell me if it means something or if it doesn't.
Go for it.
All right.
Yep.
We'll try to go quickly here because there's a lot to get in. I watched Jose Barrios just get shelled by the Phillies on Wednesday. I mean, even Didi Gregorius barreled him up. Everybody was. Does that concern you?
It does, because I seem to believe he either had a throwing session previously or he was in another game, in fact, before that, and he didn't pitch well in that one either. At least the report wasn't. So as a guy who's a big believer in Barrios' skills, he's also a guy who has to have the full feel of his pitches, and right now he doesn't. I'm going to need to see some evidence of that if I'm going to make the case that he's a very clear top 20 starter.
And by the way, our producer Kyle submitted a verbal hash brown before you joined up on our squadcast saying, would you protect Luis Castillo or Jose Barrios? I told him Barrios.
I would also protect Barrios. I'm going to be worried about any pitcher who is openly mentioned as being behind schedule. And that is an injury-related shoulder. Exactly. I have
shoulders.
I'll illustrate this as painfully as this is. There's a reason why in a keeper league of mine, the guy who has Luis Castillo is trying to peddle him this week. And it's because he realizes that the value isn't there and there is not some, you know, that there's less safety in having him on that final list. I get it.
I also watched Aurelvis Martinez of Toronto slug a few home runs. That guy is a hitter pulling everything. I don't think he's going to be on the roster early this season. He's hasn't played above A ball, but keep an eye on that guy. Yep. He's already a top 100 prospect. Speaking of former top 100 prospect, Keston Kura, shagging fly balls in left field, and he's already hit a few home runs, and they haven't named the first baseman between him and Rowdy Tellez. It's hard to believe how far Keston Kura has fallen from two seasons ago. But are you taking a chance? Is he a sleeper to you, or you've already given up?
So he is, to the extent that in Tout Wars NL, he was one of the ones I wanted to get to round out my roster. So if you're talking about the singular leagues, ones where it's your last spot and you want to just take a shot on upside, he's worth it. Remember, the ballpark still plays very well towards hitting prowess, power like he has, and there is opportunity with the DH. So I'm interested there. I'm not going to pay any degree of premium, anything that's going to cost me getting something else I need for my roster.
The Royals are batting Bobby Witt Jr. second and playing third base. And there's also thoughts coming out of Kansas City camp that MJ Melendez is going to play a lot of catcher and Sal Perez is going to be the DH at least half the time. That's interesting. Yep. And there's also this Edward Olivares kid who we watched last year get sent to the minors 20 times or something crazy.
13,
it looks like
I think
he can play.
Yeah,
he's already 7-for-10 with two homers, a double, a triple, and a stolen base. He's going to force his way into the lineup at some point. Your thoughts overall for Sally Perez, number one catcher, and fine, play more DH. He won't get hurt as much. Mm-hmm. But thoughts on Melendez making the team? Melendez could be a top 10 catcher. And Olivares, is he a sleeper for you?
Kudos Royals for leaning on the younger players and not worrying about the service time issue there.
Well, they may not do this in April. They're only doing it in mid-March.
They might. Right. They might not, but kudos if they are, because right now it looks like they're trending in the direction of making those moves. And I like it. It's, you know, we've criticized all of us in the industry have criticized the Royals for certain decisions over the past decade plus. I think this would be a good thing if you get guys like Witt and Melendez onto the roster. And I'm a big Olivares guy. Olivares is another player who I think is a good late round sleeper in the onlys and the 15 team mixed if you have a spot there, because he's got a decent amount of pop, some speed. He's just inconsistent and hasn't had the opportunity yet. We'll see. Melendez, yeah, definitely a good second catcher to stash there. I would like it a lot if they put Perez at DH. That would be a wise thing to do. And Witt's home run, man. You see the video on that one? Anyone who's not seen Bobby Witt's home run that he hit the other day, you just got to take a look.
Witt is going to be a star. So let me ask you a couple yes or no or either or questions. Yep. Bobby Witt makes his MLB debut on what day?
I will say April 20th.
Bobby Witt over Julio Rodriguez in fantasy this season?
Yes.
Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. MJ Melendez versus Adley Rutschman, more PAs this season?
Rutschman.
Okay. Either both top 12?
The difference between the two is that if Melendez takes only half the playing time, and that's not a bad idea in this case, because remember, he lost the 2020. Point. He had the, I'm losing my train of thought there.
That's okay. It's raining.
It's all good. Yeah. If he plays the hat game, Rutschman's going to play every day is the point when he comes up.
I agree with that. O'Neill Cruz, the Pittsburgh rookie shortstop who did debut last year. For those of you in certain leagues where you're drafting prospects who did not play, I have a league where like people didn't realize he batted like, I don't know, once or something. 5-for-8, 2 home runs. Yeah. He may be their starting shortstop. He's 6'7". Yeah.
And he's got a little bit of that Vlad Guerrero, the senior one, idea of I'll just swing at anything and I'll hit it a mile. And I like that. It's fun. I've looked at him quite closely over the past 6 months and I'm intrigued. He's going to be streaky, but yeah, I'm a believer.
And in that lineup, he could bat, you know, fourth or fifth right away.
He kind of should hit fourth right away. I mean, if Colin Moran was the cleanup hitter for them largely over the past 3 years, come on.
No, I see. That's exactly my point. And like, I'm trying to find out what their projected lineup is. And I know Brian Reynolds is going to bat second and they've already been doing, you can look at teams' lineups. Right. You can look at teams' lineups in spring training and get an idea what the manager is thinking. Mm-hmm. Brian Reynolds looks like he's batting second. Mm-hmm. It might be Cabrian Hayes leading off, but like Vogelbach, Anthony Alford, Yoshi Tsutsugo. I mean, I could see a scenario where O'Neill Cruz is hitting like in the middle of that order right away.
By the way, Hayes has looked all right so far. It's a tiny sample, but good progress so far.
The Padres, CJ Abrams already has a few home runs. A lot of people think Haesung Kim is going to be the shortstop to open the season. I doubt Abrams opens the season, but give me the date where he debuts in the majors.
That's a variable one. I don't think it's going to, I really don't think it happens this year. I think it's August. I think it's probably like August 5th.
All right, so he's irrelevant in fantasy for 2022.
There's intrigue, but as I said, it's variable. He could be in the opening day lineup. They did it with Tatis, but he also might not do anything this year. He falls in the Bobby Witt last year bucket.
Mackenzie Gore, 5 innings, 1 hit, no walks, nary a walk, 7 Ks.
Yeah.
We haven't really talked about him. We talk about him waiting for him to be in the majors. It's only one outing in the spring, or 2 outings. But, you know, he could matter. He mm-hmm. could force his way in over a guy who was mentioned in your article, Chris Paddock, who's not guaranteed a rotation spot.
Yep.
So if you're in who would you rather draft, Gore or Paddock?
Paddock. But it was one spring game, just as you said. That's the hook here. But that's exactly what you'd like to see from it was one spring game from Mackenzie Gore.
Some other pitchers here, Logan Webb, 10 Ks in 5 innings, are already a top 20 starter for both of us in Roto and points, I believe. Neither of us are thinking about Merrill Kelly, but you saw what he did yesterday. I mean, it's only one game against San Francisco, but he faced 9 hitters, 8 strikeouts, no hits, no walks, nothing. I mean, that's, I don't know, maybe something changed. Maybe that could be a guy who goes from like a number 80 starting pitcher to number 40, but I'm not there yet.
It's
some other lineup stuff.
It's the Chris Bassett path to success. I mean, it's guys who don't have overwhelming stuff occasionally can put up some very good and useful years. Don't forget about that in fantasy.
3 guys that have been batting leadoff in spring games: Byron Buxton, who you love, Dalton Varsho, who you love, Charlie Blackmon, who I seem to be getting on all my teams because I'm only drafting old guys. I had two auctions at the same time last night, and I got Charlie Blackmon in each of them. One is a points, one is a roto. But if he's leading off for Colorado, I'm in, man. I mean, I'm not expecting 30 home runs or even 12 steals or a 300 batting average. But Charlie Blackmon, even last season, was a fine fifth outfielder. I know you don't like him. But Buxton leading off, that's interesting. And Varsho playing center field or catcher, but having the eligibility for both and leading off, that's a big deal.
Blackmon, Coors Field hitter still. I don't see that changing anytime soon. And $13 buy of mine in Tower, so I've got respect for him. Varsho, we talked a little bit about the getting a lot of time in center field in order to be the leadoff man there. Yep, like that. Volume at catcher, it's a big thing for me. I'm not really a Buxton guy. Buxton's like touching the stove for me. I mean,
you are absolutely a Buxton guy.
No,
don't even go there.
No,
got him ranked really well. You love Byron Buxton. Kyle, back me on this. He loves Buxton.
No, I do think he ends up on Buxton, but I want to go back to the analogy there. Buxton's like touching the stove, and then you were kind of like, I might do it, I might not. In what world are you touching the stove?
Yeah,
it's a fair point.
I mean,
I don't know.
You know better, don't you?
I'm trying to remember. It was Simpsons or Futurama with the touch the stove thing. I think that was Simpsons. I don't know.
All right, you're weird.
It feels like Buxton is touching the stove. That's all. Like, I mean, whatever excitement you have, it's just he's gonna get you. You know. You know he's missing time. I know he's missing time.
And still, he's going like. Top 50 in NFC.
He's amazing when he plays. This is Trout.
Trout's going 10th. I mean, I did my do not draft list. I don't care what you say to me on Twitter. I'm ignoring it. But like, if you miss 50 games a year or more, you can't be the number 10 player in an ESPN Fantasy League. You just can't.
And you're going to be right when they miss that time. And especially if it's more, and you're going to look really right in that case. And I'll tell you, if they play 145, 150 games, every single person is coming and saying, whoa, who could you say that? That's just the way it goes with good players who get hurt.
This is process versus results. The process of saying what I'm saying or writing what I'm writing is sound. Whether it actually happens or not is irrelevant.
Yeah.
The point is, if Tatis misses half the season, you know what he'd have to do in that second half of the season to be the number 20 player in fantasy? He'd have to go nuts. And people are still drafting him really high. Not top 20 right now, but in NFBC, he was still going like 50.
He had an ADP of 40 from the overalls, and I believe it was 68.
I don't get it.
68, I think it was, for the past weekend. You looked it up.
I don't know what I did, and I don't see what people are seeing. He's missing half the season at least, and it's a wrist. Yeah. It could sap power. Come on.
Because people are not extracting the proper takeaway, and that is you need to make your call on your comfort level with the player who's going to miss time. And that's where you stand. Period. It has nothing to do with
your article. Kings of Command article was very interesting to me. Everybody, it's really one of the best articles you write in fantasy every season. You have a specific formula here. No, I'm not. I'm serious.
No, it's I like it. It's
after too many of my drafts, so it's too late to help me. But, you know, you could have helped me out and given me some of the names early on. Some of these guys I just won't draft. Some of these guys I've already been drafting. Some of these guys are Phillies. I'm trying to ignore all Phillies.
Do you like my Phillies comment, Matt?
Well, I mean, you're right on Aaron. We can all look at Aaron Nola's FIP versus his ERA and understand. But there's no change in the fact that Alec Boehm and Didi Gregorius are playing every day in April at short and third. Yeah. So any ground ball hit there is an adventure.
Yeah.
And left field is an adventure, and first base is an adventure. And, you know, Aaron Nola could easily have a 4.25 ERA with a 3.25 FIP yet again. He could do it every year now because of that awful defense.
And you're going to see a day where
that's not changing.
Where Schwarber, Harper, and Castellanos are in the same outfield, which means which is in center. So all three.
That I don't see.
I bet there's one game.
They can't force it. First of all, the only one of the three of them that could possibly play center is Bryce Harper.
Uh-huh. Yep. I won't be surprised if that happens. I really won't.
I bet you Matt Vierling is one of this season's breakout guys. When I say breakout, 400 PAs, 270, 15 homers, 12 steals. Like, he's going to play every day. He may even lead off.
Sure.
Against not only lefties. He can play, Matt Vierling. Anyway, so you have Nolan there. That was an obvious one. Bailey Ober, I really like. I don't want to give away all the names. We already mentioned Paddock. But I do want to ask you about Andrew Heaney, because I watched his outing yesterday, and they had to pull him after like 10 minutes of sharply hit line drives everywhere.
Yep.
The numbers tell us that he was unlucky last year. The home runs were exorbitant. And now he's a Dodger. What a great place to go. But at some point, they won't be able to use him if he's getting shelled again. He's giving up so much hard contact. It's a spring game. But is he even in the rotation? They could David Price him and just have him like be a spot starter.
They really could. That's a scary thought. It's which is it going to be, Heaney or is it going to be Tony Gonsolin? And Price, as you mentioned, is also in that situation.
Or Tyler Anderson.
Yeah.
I mean, they have a bunch of guys.
They could very well do a piggybacking thing. And once that starts, there's really not necessarily any stop to it. So I am concerned. Heaney was the first guy who signed, and I remember I wrote him up and said I was amazed that people were jumping to the Robbie Ray comp because they're not the same guy. They don't have the same stuff. But I do have to admit that he has very good raw stuff. It's just it gets hit really hard, and it has for years. He's had a homer problem for many years, and anyone who watched the Field of Dreams game saw it right there. But why not? As long as he's cheap, why not?
Anyway, check out Tristan's entire article. It is behind our wall, but it is worth it, unlike most of my stuff. Now let's talk about some corner infielders here. A little bit of a preview. Vlad is first round. Freddie Freeman is borderline first round. There's some obvious guys here. Jose Ramirez, of course, Machado, Devers. But overall, first or third, which position is deeper? And you have to take a guy early. We talked about this with middle infielders earlier in the week. Like, to me, like, I don't look at positions for hitters anymore and say, well, I got to fill this spot or shortstop. I don't. Just get the best hitter.
Yeah. So I actually thought, and I think when we talked the other day, I said that I felt the third base was deeper of these two, and I'd rather kind of dive into that pool. And then I actually ran numbers about it, for at least for points leagues. First base has more known commodities at the position, guys who are going to play regularly and whose roles are known. Third base has a little bit more mixing and matching and guys who play at other positions in those middle tiers. So the numbers actually say first base is deeper, but it's not deep. It's not what it was 10, 15 years ago. And I think the reason that both of the, or the fact that both of these two positions has kind of dwindled in raw talent compared to a decade, two decades ago, tells you that this position scarcity thing is a myth. It's irrelevant. The only position that's slightly light other than catcher might be second base. And I wouldn't put any stock into aggressively approaching any of these four infield positions. Would you?
No, I would not either. Let me ask you just some names and you just riff, because I think that's the best way to do it at this point. DJ LeMahieu, who is eligible at first, second, and third. He's a Yankee. I know somebody in the Yankee office who says his power is going to bounce back, but like, how are they? They have five guys for four infield spots. How do you see this all playing out, and what do you see LeMahieu doing?
So he's going to play probably 140 plus games, barring some sort of injury setback, because you're going to miss 40 games of Donaldson. I can't see Rizzo playing 150 plus games. Glaber's going to need some days off because of the defense. I think LeMahieu's going to be in there as a rotational guy amongst those three different spots. And that means that each of them is going to get some time off. And therefore, I think of him as an everyday player. And I actually agree that he's going to have a pretty good bounce back. I don't think it'll be anywhere near the degree of the amazing player he was 2019-20, where he was getting MVP votes. But spring back to even 75% of that, great value for where he's going.
290 with 20 home runs. You can see that, right?
I absolutely see that. And as a table setter in that lineup, I know they were disappointing last year, but as a table setter back to his normal self, sign me up.
So he's batting leadoff?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, who else would?
Well, Rizzo for one.
Yeah.
I mean, they did that in the playoffs, didn't they?
Yep. But they didn't have LeMahieu.
Right. But Rizzo's a walker. Yeah.
But they're the only two, and Hicks could maybe, but I think that their intent is their lineup is set with LeMahieu, and Rizzo gets the days that LeMahieu sits.
Okay, fair enough. Next, Joey Gallo. No, not Joey Gallo. Joey Votto, sorry. Joey Votto.
Very different player.
So we both have LeMahieu in our top 100. I think we both have Votto just outside. But Votto last year, 36 home runs, safe batting average, ton of walks. So in a points league, obviously you'll rank him better than I do in a roto league. But 36 home runs, that's what I want to ask you. Over, under, 30?
Over. I think the skills are absolutely legit. He is a very smart player who has some of the greatest plate discipline and plate discipline metrics historically of anybody who has ever played the game in history. And I do believe that he can keep up what he did last season. That's another guy I invested in. I think he was 21 in Tout NL. Firm believer in that. And as you said, in points leagues, he does get a little bit of a boost. It's not quite to the extent it was in the past with the changes he's made, but it's still a boost.
On all seriousness, Frank Schwindel, give me his final numbers.
I'll give him a 275 and 20. I think he could get to 26, 27 homers. Probably will end up in the 23, 24 range, but that's still
so
good.
We both believe that what he did last season was a legit breakout.
Yeah. Good contact metrics.
You rank him ahead of Ryan Mountcastle and Trey Mancini and Nate Lowe of Texas, ahead of Torkelson, Jesus Aguilar, Luke Voit. So and I think I do too. So we joked about him a lot on last year's show, and I was right about picking him versus Yelich. But even now,
to say the least,
we basically got Frank Schwindel in Jared Walsh territory.
Yeah, he's actually right behind him in my ranks overall, right around the 150 range, 16th rounder in a standard ESPN. And a lot of that for points leagues is, as you and I have been saying, it's the contact. I mean, the rep for contact is a big one with him, and he's going to play. He is kind of you and I have talked a lot about Patrick Wisdom and Frank Schwindel, and they're kind of inverted in the way that they take a plate approach. That's what I like about Schwindel, a lot more safety.
Matt Chapman now in a better lineup and a better ballpark. Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
If a year ago today we had Matt Chapman say number 75 overall, which I think is relatively accurate, today you have him at 172.
Yeah.
What changed for you in one season?
The complete all-out going for power at the expense of batting average. And that does come with increased strikeout rates, which is a problem in the points leagues. The other is that injuries came up and those were an issue. And as I've said to you, my big thing on Chapman, I'm a huge baseball fan of Matt Chapman. The defense keeps him in the lineup, but when injuries are the obstacle, you can't count on the 155 plus. I like him though. I do think he rebounds.
I rank him better than you do. I'm sure I do. I don't know where I rank him, but 172 seems like it's really late. Next up, Eugenio Suarez. Would you even bother?
I think he might have to at a certain point. He's got a shortstop eligibility that helps. And by the way, when you mentioned Suarez, tie it to Chapman. I was going to say Chapman has gone the Eugenio Suarez school of uppercutting the ball, and not all good things come from that.
You don't have Mondesi in your top 300. How about that?
He's terrible in points. Terrible.
No, I see that, but I mean, you realize like you have Miles Straw ranked because Mondesi could do that.
Miles Straw is he's probably not well ranked. He's a 290. Yeah, he's just above.
So barely.
Just above Mondesi.
I understand Mondesi's far more valuable in Roto, has no value in the points, but I was a little surprised to see you didn't have him ranked at all. All right. I don't know if I have any more questions for you. I think that's fine. I mean, Ke'Bryan Hayes, like a year ago, Ke'Bryan Hayes and Bohm were like borderline top 100 in our rankings. Bohm is far out now, and you have Hayes like number 200 or 180. It just seems like things change so fast, and we just assume that something changed, and that's why. Like, we loved Ke'Bryan Hayes and Alec Bohm a year ago.
Yeah.
And now we don't.
Well, no, we did not love Ke'Bryan Hayes a year ago. Did we?
Where'd you rank him a year ago?
140, maybe.
120?
Okay. No, 150, maybe. I'll look it up.
All right.
But then again, that was the proto set that I did. I was not the guy who wanted Ke'Bryan Hayes last year. I made that crystal clear to people. You recall that. He was on my do not draft. But I still think he could go the Matt Chapman route of success. He could become the Chapman of 3 or 4 years ago. There is a path to do that. That's why I mentioned Hayes when you brought up the Pirates before.
We did our first mock draft on Wednesday. It was a points league. Kyle had the second pick. Ohtani went first, which he should in a points league, even at ESPN where you can't use him in both ways. Juan Soto second. I took a pitcher first, Corbin Burns.
Yeah, you got him.
Trey Turner.
I was so mad.
I took Josh Hader. How about that?
When did you take him?
Did that. Maybe around three.
Well, yeah, I was looking at him around the same time. It was not fun drafting near you.
Because in a points league and a roto league are totally different.
Yeah.
Could you give us a 30-second reminder of what's different about roto versus points?
Pitchers are inflated in scoring by a substantial amount. It's a little bit like quarterbacks in the fantasy football realm, except the difference is that it's not super duper deep like quarterback is. So You definitely want to lean on the aces. My take is you need to have one coming out of the first two rounds. It's problematic if you don't. You're going to have to go pretty heavy on the guys in the middle rounds, and you might end up overpaying. The advantage with closers, since you mentioned it, is they will be in your lineup any day that your starters aren't working. And with our daily transactions, there's huge value in making sure that you're not burning starts and filling them with any point getting potential from those closers at all. And that includes the guys getting the wins like Brent Suter in the middle rounds. That's why I almost always keep my bench in a points league full of pitchers.
All right, we're 30 minutes in. Time to bring in Kyle for some hash browns. Kyle, what you got for questions from Twitter? And we'll try to answer them best we can.
Yeah, no problem. Mike wants to know, if you had the opportunity to draft both Tatis and Acuna in redraft, would you do that?
It sounds promising that Acuna is going to play in April. He may not play outfield until May or early or late May. That, it keeps changing. But he's going to play in April for the Braves, which is a good thing. And I keep moving up my rankings. He went like 50th in our mock, which seems late to me. He should have been going earlier, even in a points league. He's obviously more valuable in Roto because the 40-40 potential. But like you mentioned to me before the show, like Acuna can't possibly lead the league in homers and steals. He can. He's not missing much time in April. So there's a big difference between Acuna and Tatis here. Yeah. We know Tatis is missing like All-Star break. Acuna is probably not missing maybe like a couple weeks of April.
Yeah, there's plenty of talk that having the DH is a plus for them. That's a big plus for them. They could get him in there on the 10th day of the season potentially and then rotate it.
Right. I bet he misses very little time.
I do too. That's another guy in the tout team because I do believe he misses a minimal amount. I'm with you. There are only two things that worry about Acuna is I don't think he's going to get a lot of green lights initially. So we could be looking at a month where when's he going to steal some bases? And the other is in points leagues because when things don't go perfect for him, he does have a lot of swing and miss in his game. That's going to hurt in the points leagues.
Yeah, I don't buy that first part. I think if he's healthy enough to play, he's healthy enough to do everything he wants to do. So I don't think there'll be any red light. I think the point of the question here is, can you afford to take two guys who you know are going to miss time on the same offense?
Yeah.
And my answer to that would be, it depends what type of a league it is. I have a league where one of the leagues I drafted last night where I have Tatis already protected like $50. And I did get Acuna at another 50. And I thought, you know what? I'm all in on these two guys. There were no stolen bases available. I went all in. I think you can do it. It's a little bit risky in an ESPN league with only three bench spots. I don't know if I could do it there.
Well, we got the four now. That helps a little bit, but it's still a very limited bench.
I don't get any of the memos here.
So the other is we now don't have only the one IL spot. We have three of them. So you can get away with it a little bit more easily now, but I'm doing the sin of answering the question with a question. My question is, well, what was the asking price? It's all about the asking price.
All about the value. All right, what's next?
Sounds like you wouldn't go out of your way to do it, but you wouldn't mind it if it fell in your lap. Right. Dylan, Clevinger or Syndergaard? If you're rolling the dice on a bounce back for 2022, who you got?
I did not put Syndergaard on my do not draft list because he's going so late in drafts that I actually would take him at that spot. It's like number 250. Clevinger's going 100 picks earlier. I'm not sure I would do that, but I didn't want to put him on my do. I think Clevinger will make 25 really good starts. He'll be Kershaw from the right side. That's how I view it. Syndergaard, I don't want to invest. I've seen too much. But Clevinger, that's a normal Tommy John. He's coming back. He has plenty of time. The team has depth so they can baby him a little bit. It's just like the Dodgers to some degree to me. Mackenzie Gore is sitting there in AAA in April. They could bring him up. I think Clevinger makes 25 great starts just like Kershaw.
I kind of like that. If you take the names off of them, yeah, I could very well see that. I'm really struggling to find Clevinger in my ranks here. Now, I don't have him all that far ahead of Syndergaard. I've got to remedy that. But yeah, I'm a Clevinger guy. I'm with you. I think the ceiling is definitively higher for Clevinger. So Syndergaard, after the injuries he's had the past couple of years, he'd have to really press forward and have everything go right to reach the ceiling that Clevinger could.
Could you argue the floor is higher for Clevinger too?
Yeah, I could.
I mean, he checks both boxes. Bundy's got our next question. He's picking at the turn of a 10-teamer in a head-to-head category league. He wants to know what positional balance you're going with there. Hitter-hitter? Hitter-pitcher, pitcher-pitcher. Obviously, it depends how the board falls, but if you're prepping for a 10-teamer head-to-head category, what are your first thoughts?
I don't even look at it that way. The only thing I wouldn't consider is pitcher. I want to get a bat there.
Yeah, not a category. Even
in a, you know, like I want to get it. It would either be two hitters or a hitter and a pitcher, but it depends on what's available. Who falls? You know, if Walker Buehler falls, I don't know, maybe. I mean, I would probably go hitter there is in a 10-team. 10-team's a lot different than a 12. There's enough pitching depth to me in a 10-team where I can wait a little bit longer. I might go pitcher around 3-4 if I go hitter. But I don't go into any draft saying, oh, I got to take this position at this spot. I just don't do that. It depends on who's available. Mookie Betts falls to number 10 and 11. You know, I'm in. Unless Gerrit Cole does, it's probably not a pitcher for me. But Freeman and Betts at the turn. Harper might be there. A lot of good stuff. I don't know. You would never take pitcher.
No.
1-2.
No, not in a category. In a points, I can make you the case. It's tough at the turn because then you're waiting to get your first hitters at the, what would that be? The 30th and 31st picks? Not the easiest thing. But in a category, no way. I mean, I've got Gerrit Cole ranked in that format to be one of these picks. And that's my number two pitcher after Shohei Ohtani. And that's really because of the DH stuff. I mean, are you really going to reach and take what if three pitchers go in the first round? What if it's Ohtani, Cole, and Corbin Burns before your 10th pick? Are you really going to reach and take two pitchers? I'm not going to take one.
No, I might be more likely actually to take a Woodruff or a Buehler off the board because I want to have one of the aces, but
I wouldn't there.
In a point sleep. No way. I don't know.
Betts, you mentioned Harper. You mentioned Betts. I mean, there's the chance. Who else would fall down there? Freddie Freeman
Brandon
would fall
Woodruff's
down. You
really
mentioned
good. I mean, there's nothing wrong with Brandon Woodruff, man.
Betts, Harper, Freeman, I'd argue Kyle Tucker all belong over Brandon Woodruff in the categories. And I'll bet you have him ranked that way too.
That's fair. Ryan has a keeper question for the next two seasons. We touched on part of this earlier. Buxton in the 13th round or Winker in the 18th? We're just talking the next two seasons.
What format?
Didn't say, just a keeper question. So let's assume Rota.
I mean, the one of them has extraordinarily more upside than the other. So I guess it's Buxton. And when you get to keeper questions like round 13 versus 18 or 10 versus 20, they don't even matter to me what rounds they are. Just take the better player. Who's going to go higher in a draft or who's going to be spent more on an auction? So to me, that answer would be Buxton. Now, I personally would not be down to Buxton versus Winker. I mean, Winker's upside, we've already seen it. It's batting average, platoon, power, no speed. Buxton's upside is Mike Trout, healthy and the brittle, frankly. So it would only surprise me if Buxton's a top 10 player this year that he played enough to do it. Same with Trout. Buxton could be better than Trout. Trout doesn't run. So the answer there would be Buxton, but I'm not doing it. Find someone else.
Yeah, so as a matter of fact, Buxton, I've got 154th, so he's devalued as a 13th rounder here. Jesse Winker is 86th for me. He fits points scoring quite well, so that's why I raised the point scoring question. But I'm with Eric on this, and because most of these come from a roto standpoint, I'm taking the better player, and Buxton fits those formats a lot better based on what he can do and based on the ceiling, and that's what I want. And by the way, in the keeper leagues, I'm noticing this in my keeper league too. When you're talking about those draft picks or the prices, people get way too worked up over $1 to $3 of price or one fewer year, 3 to 4 or 3 rounds difference late in the draft.
Don't worry about
it. I'm with you. Eric's dead on here.
I mean, in both of these auctions I had last night, I when I nominated Nelson Cruz, I was getting him, but I wouldn't have gone to like $25. I mean, that's just crazy. But like, whether it was 14 or 18 or 21, I wanted the player. I had the money. Like, don't worry about $1 here or there. I understand in like labor and tout NL, AL, where we talk about all those, somebody's going to say, well, I'll go to 16 on Matt Chapman, but not 17. I just think that's ridiculous. If you want Matt Chapman, spend the extra dollar. And then at the end, you worry about losing the dollar later. That's how I view it.
You're playing against people who craft the dollar values in that. It's not the same for people casually. I mean, there's going to be a situation in my personal league where even those guys are very smart people where it makes a heck of a lot of sense to $2 overbid. I'm with you, Eric.
Yeah, but no, you're implying that I'm not smart if I go the extra dollar on Matt Chapman there. And I'm saying to you, even though you say that Matt Chapman is a $16 player in your projections, or Zola does, or Cardi, or whoever, if I want Matt Chapman at 18, You can't tell me I'm wrong. It's just your projection. So I'm not saying that you guys are less smart than I'm saying, but I'm not less smart for going the extra dollar either. If I really want Nelson Cruz and I'm willing to go above my $14 projection to 18, that's okay because you can't tell me that it's wrong. You're just recommending that.
I'm not saying where the smart part comes into this. Because are you talking about just the general league or are you talking about labor talent?
I'm talking about both. Certainly last night was one of them was an experts league.
Right.
But I think prices were all over the place. And what I found in labor and in tout is that people who obviously wanted a player and were aggressive in bidding stopped at a certain point. They said, all right, Chapman at 16 is as high as I will go. I will not go to 17. Not me speaking, other people.
Right.
And then at the end of the draft, they had $10 for three players, which is crazy. You had the money right on Matt Chapman if you really wanted him.
Right.
So I understand you and Zola and Cardi and everybody who does a projections and has a price for a certain player. I just don't see why you don't break it more often. And maybe you say you do.
No, it's contextual. I mean, the thing, this is why let's take the smart part out of this because that is not at all either of us.
You said the word smart first. No, I didn't. I was reacting.
I said it was smart people in the room. And by the way, you're a member of that league. So I don't like drafting against you. You were a nightmare doing the ones in the Bristol bullpen one. Not fun. So those people are going to have very specific dollar values. You need to read the room, keep up with the trend. And for example, in tout, everybody was ahead of pace. So I knew there'd be bargains later on. So I am not going to press the extra dollar. I knew that going in and that was the plan. That was the thought process. If they're behind, different story. But you're talking about spending one extra dollar on Matt Chapman in a labor room where everybody else in the room has graded him equally, exactly $18. You want to pay 19? No problem with that. That's the right thing to do. What you don't want to do is be in the other room you're talking about where people are leaving $10 on the table. They're pushing him to 20 and 21. You're like, well, I really like him. I'm just going to go 22. They're going to go 23. And then you're going to get caught up in it and go 24. Those are the foolish moves. But you don't do that.
Yeah, there's a limit, obviously, to what I would. Somebody posted last night, well, Eric was getting Nelson Cruz no matter what. That's not true. There was a limit to what I would do. But, I mean, I didn't hit that limit.
No matter what, so it's the dumbest thing you could possibly do in that format.
By the way, I've got way too many shares of Nelson Cruz. So if something, and Wainwright, if something goes wrong with either of these old guys, I could have a problem.
Don't take Nelson Cruz down for me, please. I've got a share.
I've got shares everywhere. I can't wait till these drafts are all over and auctions. I think I'm almost done, actually. But anyway, next question.
Nelson Cruz would definitely draft Eric Carabao first overall in his analyst fantasy draft that he has coming up shortly. So I have no doubt that he'll pay that back. Last question comes from Andrew. First year keeper draft coming up, 10 teams. He wants to know what settings you guys prefer in a keeper league. How many keepers, cap on how many years you can keep said players. What if you're setting up a keeper league from scratch, 10 years, or 10 teams, what's the style you most favor?
Well, you should answer this. I mean, I prefer leagues that have like contracts where – like at a certain point, I cut Trout in one of my leagues because he was like $50 and that's ridiculous. But he ended up going for 70. So it was wrong, but I didn't want him. I should have traded him. But I like leagues where the contract ends at a certain point. You have to trade him, get rid of him to somebody who's trying to win that year, or you can only keep a guy for a certain number of years. And so like somebody else can roster Vlad Guerrero at some point, but I can't say what the exact number of keepers should be. I mean, 5, 10, a whole team. I mean, in a dynasty, how would you set it up?
It's another, there's no wrong answer to this one. I like less restrictions on player movement and keeping players year over year, but I like aggressive pricing. So, I mean, the major difference we keep mentioning keeper and dynasty is dynasty allows you to retain control of players for a much longer period of time. It also has things like the first year player draft, which means all those international signings and the last year's amateur draft class comes in, and that's a draft that you do. I find that a heck of a lot of fun. So, you know, that's the case for those. In a keeper league, the one I've mentioned a few times on the show is the 12 teamer. We keep up to 12 players. We got a 5-man minor league system, and you can retain those guys without any sort of penalty. And it's a good casual general across, like right in the middle kind of league. I don't like ones that have, you know, 3-year caps on player contracts and then you have to cut them. I mean, that's not fun. If you got Fernando Tatis because you were on board in spring training, you knew the Padres might push him into their opening day lineup, and they did. Kind of stinks to have had to cut him after this past year, doesn't it? He's still so young. I made that bold move. That's just dumb to me.
So sign him to an extension where the price goes up or something.
That I agree with. That I agree. And by the way, you mentioned with Ottonoo, that is a very good part of the system, is that you can aggressively price the player. I like that. That's the way to do it.
I have a keeper league, my oldest league, where like after 3 years, you have to actually start paying real money out of your wallet.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
For a player.
I'm good with that.
And there was a point like a while ago where I was paying like $50 real money for Albert Pujols. And I just decided that was crazy. So I traded him for David Wright. And then, you know, a year later, that looked really bad. But the point was, like, I didn't want to spend real money to keep the player, so it motivated me to trade him away.
But that was a decision you made, and I like the fact you were forced into a decision.
I could have kept him forever.
Right. Instead of having an arbitrary set of rules dictate when you can and cannot maintain control of your players, I like that you had to make a decision based on it. It was what your comfort level was.
All right, well, my comfort level will be better once the season starts. It's 2 weeks from today is opening day, so please prepare. There will be obviously lots of drafts. We should note to the people that are tweeting us, for those asking about the ESPN head-to-head fantasy schedule, week one will be an 11-day scoring period, and you will not be able to make changes on Monday. So 11 days with your roster. Don't bark at us. We don't make the rules. We also don't change them quick
enough. I like that, though. Come on. It's good.
Well, I think it's fine. I think as long as you have clarity, it's fine. I don't like rules being changed after, like MLB just changing rules. I don't like that.
Okay? Where they add three more playoff teams 5 minutes before the opener.
Right. And by the way, we still don't know for sure how many active players are going to be on MLB rosters when the season starts.
I thought they announced that. Wasn't that last night?
Is it clear 28?
Yeah.
I think they said they were leaning towards
That's true. Yeah. But like, they could always expand it further, but it looks like it's going to be 28 on opening day.
Those will just be relief pitchers. I mean, obviously those will be just long men and relief pitchers at this point. So they're not going to add hitters. So you're going to see a roster construction like of 13 hitters and 15 pitchers on a big league rosters in April.
Yes.
Which is just ridiculous, but you know, whatever. Anyway, that's what's going to happen at ESPN Fantasy. We will be back on Monday. Hopefully NCAA brackets are still in one piece for you. After that, go Villanova. We'll do an outfield preview on Monday and also catch up with all the news and get ready for the regular season. Any final thoughts, sir?
I think you wrapped it up quite nicely. Got to enjoy the weekend and good luck to everybody in their drafts. Got to be a big draft weekend, especially considering a lot of people locked it in before the lockout got set.
All right, for Tristan Happy Cockcroft and Kyle Soppy, I'm Miraliera Carabel. Have an awesome weekend.